We are in the back half of October, and the Chandler area teams are still slugging it out in the premier section of 6A high school football, and for good reason. One team was off, two of the three schools that saw action were winners, and two of the three smaller schools came out on top as well. We'll dive in deep this week and discuss how our schools finished the week with a 4-2 record. Plenty of teams, plenty of talent, and plenty of action. Brett Quintown with the C-Town Rivals podcast, where high school sports is always on the agenda. Ralph Amsden and Chili join me this week, so reach out to us via Twitter. You know we'll tweet back. Visit us on ArizonaVarsity.com, and of course, give a like to our Facebook page. You'll love it. We'll start off with the Valley Christian Trojans. First off, they called it the Stars and Stripes game, where they honored military personnel, vets, and first responders. Props to the school for doing that. But moving to the gridiron, Jake Orth. What type of player do we have here? He returns the opening kickoff 75 yards for a touchdown, and Valley Christian never looked back. 10-3 lead at the half, and a couple of Peyton Hansel TD passes in the fourth quarter put a stamp on the game. Orth rushes for 180 yards and a 24-3 victory over Fountain Hills. Ralph, a team that was 0-5, has now won three straight for the first time in a couple of years.
And that's important. I mean, especially in the fashion that they've done it. I think what they've surrendered, no touchdowns.
Basically, right.
In 3 weeks.
3 points, yeah.
Yeah, that's some confidence building for the defense. Confidence that they'll need going into their game against Yuma Catholic. This is a team that's peaking. This is a team that's probably a championship contender in 3A. So this is really, this is where you get to see if you've made any progress throughout the season. I don't think that they need to win this game. I mean, they're effectively potentially eliminated from the playoffs right now.
Yes.
The way that 3A works, they could technically backdoor their way in with two quality victories. But even then, it might still be tough.
Because they're in the mid-20s right now with the power rankings.
Right.
So they've got a tall order.
If that gave them the section, then obviously they would get in at 16, and then they would have to worry about some pretty stiff competition regardless. So it's an uphill battle, and by uphill I mean it's a cliff rock face that you got to climb without any gear. So, but I would like to see some progress from this team. I don't want to see it, you know, them take a 54-point loss before they went on this three-game tear. And then turn around and take another 54-point loss. It would be nice to see them be competitive, to show that, you know, their offense has figured out how to move the ball. Can they move the ball on Yuma Catholic? They figured out how to stop some people. Can they stop Yuma Catholic? Jalen Barnes is a really good football player, so that's going to be a great test for some of these young Trojans. I really hope that they're able to show some growth and not just take a, you know, three-hour drive out to Yuma. Then have to drive back, you know, with nothing to show for it.
Right, you definitely don't want the running clock at all in that game, so hopefully they will be able to put some points on the board.
Valley Christian's been one of those teams that, you know, it's kind of been a down and then up. They're well coached. I know they've had some transfers, some key players transfer out, and this isn't the team that it was the past few years. So they've kind of got to find a new identity. And I don't know, hopefully they just regroup, get some things together, and make their way towards the playoffs.
And indeed, tough matchup for Jeff Rutledge's team. They head to 6-2 Yuma Catholic. Wow, and then after that, they've got Castile on the schedule. So yeah, indeed, Ralph and Chili, tall order for the Trojans. The Seton Catholic Sentinels, they've now dropped back-to-back ball games. They fall to the Marcos Deniza Padres 48-21. This one was pretty one-sided as Marcos was up 14-0 after a quarter and 34-7 at the half. Chili, you guys knew the Padres had some weapons, which is why they're 6-2 now. It seems like Marcos was just too much for Seton Catholic.
Yeah. Seton had the unfortunate opportunity to run into a angry and somewhat frustrated, but not in a bad way, Naz Greer.
Okay.
One of the top quarterbacks. I think me and Ralph can agree that he's one of the top quarterbacks in the state that, for whatever reason, doesn't have an offer right now. But Naz Greer can play. Naz Greer was coming off two tough losses. One to Casa Grande, who Seton will be playing next this week. And then another loss on television to Saguaro. And, you know, Naz is a quarterback that just took his team to the championship game last year, and he's ready to do some things that, and, you know, they were playing for their coach to get him win number, what was it,
332? 332, yeah.
So, on top of all of that, I heard that Marcos was just doing everything, going for it on 4th and 8, up 34 in the third quarter.
Wow.
You know, they kind of got to get their swagger back. And I guess you kind of do it by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. So if that means, hey, let's just show them what we're about, go for it on 4th and 8, convert, get this touchdown real quick, it's whatever. But, you know, shout out to my man, New Wade County, still holding it down for the Sentinels. He had 70 yards on the ground, one touchdown, and Jacob Terrell, he had a touchdown through the air, 70-plus yards receiving. Seton went through a few quarterbacks. I know some other kids got some reps late in the game. You know, I think Seton's going to find their way. They're going to play Casa Grande, who unfortunately is not going to have Brock Hall. Thoughts are with him. He's done for the season. I watched him play 8 plays against Tempe last week, and he went down with an arm injury and was in a sling for the entire second half.
Wow. And that's the one thing we hate when we see kids get hurt. Doesn't matter if they're a CUSD kid, if they're Tempe Union kid, whatever school district, we root for all players. That's
the
one thing.
So the interesting thing about this Casa Grande game, I'm not sure how much you guys know, but Stephen Fugger, who played for Seton a couple years ago on that machine team, on the team machine, he coaches over at Casa Grande. Now.
Interesting.
And they have another coach. I think it's Barrow. Coach Barrow. I don't know if I'm saying it right. But both of them are coaching over at Casa Grande now. So I know that, you know, they probably want to, you know, let Seton know what time it is.
Sure.
Seton's got to make a trek up there. So we'll see what happens.
Here's the thing about Marcos. I think they're trying to get not just Paul Morrow the wins record, but I think Naz Greer's got an outside shot at Emmanuel Gantz's record, passing yards record. And we were out watching them play against Saguaro. When they were down 40, he was throwing deep every play. And when they're up 40 on Seton, they're throwing deep every play. So I'm not completely surprised by that. One thing that Seton needs to nip in the bud right now is their problems basically at center. I was following that game online, and it sounded like there were several bad snaps that either resulted in turnovers or loss of downs. That's unforced errors. You can't have those and compete. Or most teams aren't talented enough to overcome several unforced errors. You know, you want somebody to make you screw up, or you want to avoid screwing up altogether. So I'm not surprised by what Marcos did. You know, that obviously can't sit well, and they'll meet each other again next year. But this Casa Grande team, it's an interesting one. As far as quarterback, you know, I'm not sure if with Brock Hall out, they might slide Cam Gardner back there. Or
they use him for some Wildcat against Tempe. Not very successfully, but a lot of things aren't very successful when Mike King Johnson is edge rushing.
So. Right. So the whole thing with Casa Grande is they have weapons on the outside that if they get the ball, they do dangerous things. You know, but can they get the ball to those dangerous weapons without their quarterback remains to be seen. It would be an opportunity for Seton to play spoiler. Right now, Casa Grande sits in the number 16 spot, and basically Tempe's the one on the outside looking in, trying to cancel Casa Grande's ticket to the playoffs. So if Seton can win, they can end what I consider to be a championship-caliber team at the beginning of the year, can end their season effectively. I doubt they have the ability to get back into place for playoff contention, but they can help Tempe move along, and that was a team that I think had to have earned Seton's respect in some right just with the way Mike King Johnson played.
So one thing that I will say, following up on what Ralph said, is Casa Grande does have a quarterback, James Dodd. He ended up playing the second half. They went through a couple quarterbacks, like Ralph mentioned. Cam Gardner played some snaps in their Wildcat formation. And then they had a kid, number 14, I can't remember his name, I think it was Avia, and he was okay. They came in the second half with this kid, Dodd, and he was able to do some Tim Tebow-type stuff. He looked more of like a runner versus a big kid. wanted to run the ball a little bit, and was able to make passes efficiently. You know, they took the L against Tempe last second. Make sure you follow at AZHSFB on Twitter, because I usually send all the tweets there, all the video updates and stuff. You know, it's a big drop from Brock Hall, who's great, but this kid, James Dodd, he might surprise you if you don't take him seriously.
And indeed, on Friday will be a pair of 4-4 clubs that will meet Gary Gallant's team taking on the Casa Grande Cougars. That's Seton Catholic's final road game of the year. The Castile Colts, they continue to rock. They post a 68-0 shutout over ASU Prep. How about Mac Johnson? 5 total touchdowns in this one, and Gunnar Cruz is just dominant at the quarterback spot. This squad is 7-1 on the year, and like I said, Ralph, last week, they're just scary good. The team can beat you in all facets of the game.
They can, and they're really setting themselves up to not be taken lightly for the next 2 years.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're not doing themselves any favors in that right, but if you want the spotlight, this is how you get it. You know, you go out as sophomores and you light up the scoreboard and take care of business. Because their strength of schedule was not very good, they are really suffering in the AIA Max Preps poll, and will likely, even with only having one loss, will have a road game after, I think, being as high as third before their loss to UMass.
That's the one thing I did want to mention. Yeah, they're ranked number 9, and lack of strength of schedule, they still could be on the road opening week.
It's possible that they earn themselves a home game. It's possible that they earn themselves a opening round home game against UMass. You know, you never know. So we'll see how that shakes out. But I've definitely been impressed with this team. I think they've probably tempered everybody's expectations as far as them being a title contender. But you never know. It could really have been their first road experience of having to drive 3 hours, and maybe all they needed was that experience to learn from it and grow. Maybe their heads were getting a little big. You know, you never really know the situation. So as far as Gunnar Cruz and Mac Johnson go, they definitely have a ton of talent on offense. I watched some film of some of their defensive players last night, and it's just a really, really promising team that has the opportunity to do some damage this year. I think they would probably be best served to put themselves in position to try to get a home game,
absolutely,
which is sort of outside their control. I believe they'll easily win this week and maybe have a little bit tougher time, but ultimately possibly get the win out at Valley Christian. And so, you know, it'll just be kind of where the chips fall.
You know, I'm really curious to see what happens in the last game of the season.
Yes.
At Valley Christian.
Absolutely.
Against a coach who knows the high school landscape out here really, really well. Against a coach who has had, I guess, you know, you could say some sort of success out here at this level. You know, until then, man, the only thing I can think is it's mind-boggling what Castile is doing. They've given up 20 points in, what, their 7 wins? Like, that's giving up less than 3 points a game.
Absolutely.
Like, that is absolutely crazy. And that doesn't even get into the fact that their offense is looking almost juggernaut, like, you know, just hanging 40 and 30 and 50 and 60 on teams. So, you know, they gave up the 33 to Yuma. Like Ralph said, maybe, you know, they needed that as a wake-up call.
Sure.
Like I said, I'm curious to see what happens at Valley. I think that's going to be more indicative of who this team really is going into the playoffs.
And I agree. I think that is going to be a real good matchup for both teams. Kind of like you said, Chile, just going into the playoffs, we'll see how they respond. And then for Valley Christian, as we know, they've been crushing people. So now when they get up against Castile, are you the crushy or are you the crusher? Or is this an equally footed team for both? So yeah, that next week, week 10, will be very good for these teams. This Friday, it's going to be ugly. The Castile Colts, they host the North Point Prep Falcons, and this is a team that's been shut out in back-to-back games and unfortunately is on a 16-game losing streak.
Oh.
The Hamilton Huskies, they get back in the win column with a 51-39 victory over the Bash of Bears. I'll start off with the Bears, and this may sound weird given the score, but they played well. Coach Todd felt they could run the ball, and they did. You can see that Deshaun Goodman, he got that work in, 273 yards on the ground. Basha put together some very nice scoring drives. They mixed up the run and the pass, which kept the Huskies off balance. Now, Ralph, I'll say everyone in this studio is a big fan of both Ryan Kelly and Terrell Brown. But Steve Bellis, he put Chance Brewington back in there at safety, and that helped neutralize anything between those two.
Yeah, I mean, Chance Brewington is big. He's tall. He's basically my jump ball guy.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to pick one in the city of Chandler, yeah, Terrell Brown has a huge catch radius. He's very, very talented. But Chance Brewington is the guy with the strong hands who's going to come down with it if it's up in the air. He ends up picking off Ryan Kelly twice. The only other player to ever do that to Ryan Kelly is Dre Mills, which happened in the playoff elimination game when Ryan Kelly was a sophomore. You know, Ryan Kelly, that was their ninth game this season, and while he did miss one entire game. So through eight games, he only had two interceptions. And Ryan Kelly throws a lot. So that was very impressive, not only for Chance Brewington to go in, play defense for the very first time, get nine tackles, get two interceptions, double Ryan Kelly's total for the season, and ultimately put Hamilton in a position where they get the win, because it was definitely closer than the score would indicate.
Uh-huh.
Basha was down 5 points with the ball at the 20.
That's right.
With around 3 minutes left. And they kind of got away from that run game that put them in the position in the first place. But they definitely had a chance to get that win. Ryan Kelly was harassed all day by Braden Flynn. And part of that was Chance Brewington keeping Terrell Brown covered. So a couple of coverage sacks, a couple of times Braden Flynn just, you know, showed his talent. And he was all over Ryan Kelly. And Chance Brewington did great, and yet Deshaun Goodman helps keep Basha in the game, give them an opportunity to win. And I was definitely impressed with Basha's resilience in that game. But ultimately, before the season, this is a lot of the Hamilton kids told us. They were waiting for this game. They wanted to get to the quarterback. They wanted to show Basha what was up, and they wanted to do it out there on their home field. And so congratulations to Hamilton. And I guess you interviewed Steve Bellis, so let's go ahead and hear from him.
I'm here with the Hamilton Huskies head football coach Steve Bellis. And Coach Bellis, you guys are 6 wins and 2 losses. I'm going to say the last month has been kind of like a roller coaster, down to Desert Ridge, but you get up to Skyline, fall to Brophy, but you guys certainly got up for Basha. Kind of tell us what the mood and the team has been about over the last 4 weeks.
I think it really comes down to how we have practiced is how we have played. So hopefully those life lessons have been learned, and we're not going to have any more weeks of bad practices. Because each time we have done it, the results haven't been good on the field. And even though we have talked about it, I don't think until you get in those situations where you're actually not being successful that you realize, hey, maybe this stuff we're doing in practice is really important, and you got to look in the mirror and self-evaluate along with coaches. I think we do that as well. And what do we have to do to put our kids in the best position, but also practicing well enough to put ourselves in the best position to win on Friday nights?
Tyler Shuck is a junior quarterback. Traditionally, you have started seniors. Is he where you expected him to be so far at this point through 8 games?
I would say absolutely, exception of the Brophy game. It looked like somebody had taken over his body that night, and he wasn't himself. He was a little bit beat up from the week before. He had gotten a knee against Skyline, but it wasn't serious, but I think it affected him a little bit more than I thought it would. And quarterbacks are that vital to your team, and he's no exception to our team. And we went as he went, along with the way we practiced that week. So it was a avalanche that we couldn't control or stop.
One of the adjustments you made for the most recent game, the Basha game, Chance Brewington was on defense most of the time. I'm used to seeing him go out for a pass, but he seemed like he did a pretty good job in helping shut down the pass, especially against Terrell Brown, who had scored a TD against everybody he played, but you guys kind of kept him in check.
Yeah, our goal was definitely to take him out of the game. I think we did that, but they had some other kids step up for him for Basha. But Chance being back there, I think, really limited him to what he's not used to doing, and I'm sure frustrated Kelly a little bit. For the most part, Kelly went to some other guys and they were successful, but you know, Chance played his first game on defense, got two picks, so it shows you a little bit about his athletic ability and what he can do, and that he's just not a one-hit wonder in terms of being an offensive guy. He's a true team player, and that's why he's one of our team captains as well.
And speaking of team players, a young man who I've gotten to know pretty well, who's a very smart individual both on and off the field, Tyler Alexander. Seems like he's a guy who can go both ways for you, and I don't know if officially he's a captain or not, but he definitely seems like he shows some leadership.
He does. I think he leads more by example and says, you know, he has great work ethic. There's no question about him. That was instilled by his parents. And I think when he's out there, he's going to give you everything he's got. And he's another one who went a little bit of both ways for us on Friday night. I think we're just in a situation where we got to play our best. And sometimes those best aren't just your 22. It might just be your 20 players that you have, and you go with it, and you're going to go out there and give your team the best opportunity to win, and I think that's what we did on Friday night.
It's still fairly early in the week, but I'm sure you've, at least in the back of your mind, prepared for your next opponent, the Perry Pumas. They seem like they've come a long way over the last, we'll say, 3 or 4 years. 1 year they were 2-8, but gradually they've started to make the playoffs, and this year seems like they have some explosiveness in their offense. What do they bring to the table from what you've seen on film?
Well, I think they bring a dual-threat quarterback who's only a junior, who does a great job for them. I think the James brothers are number 2 and number 10 are exceptional athletes. They have more skill than they have ever put on the field before, and they got a defense that I like to call them tenacious. They just seem to play really good team defense. They get after it. Offense is probably more complex than I've seen out of them, but it always seems that way when you have really good athletes. And I think Steve Axman's over there helping him out, who used to be, matter of fact, he recruited me when he was at U of A as a quarterback years. And so this is years ago. So Preston got a jewel there. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Axman went for the Basha job a few years ago, and that would have been scary if he would have got the job. That guy has got more knowledge of football than probably most people that coach in high school. And he's a genuinely pretty good guy. I just think they got a good staff, and they're doing things exceptionally well. You're not 8-1 by accident. You're 8-1 because you do some really good things. So we're going to have to bring our lunch pail and have a full day work of 48 minutes of football.
You've been part of a lot of perfect seasons in the game of football. I'm going to flash back to 1988. You were wearing a Notre Dame uniform. Can you tell us about the player? Do you even remember it? You took a pitch from Tony Rice, and then you fired it down the field to, I believe, Ricky Waters for a TD. What was that play like?
Well, it's funny. We were going to do that play a couple weeks before in the Miami game, which is that, yeah. I remember Lou on the side and going, "Jay Bellis, you ready for the play?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm ready, coach." And I think he was just nervous about doing it. But we had it in that week, and, of course, we carried it over, and we used it against Air Force, I believe. And Ricky's such a good athlete. He got behind the secondary pretty quick, and I was fortunate enough to throw him a good ball. And that was one good experience of many at Notre Dame, but that was quite the team. The one thing I really remember about that team that I think any Notre Dame player from that unit would tell you is that we really got along, and it was a one-unit kind of team. It didn't matter if you're a black or white, and we all kind of hung out together after games and did a lot of stuff together. So I think that team bonding stuff that some kids might laugh about today, the teams that sometimes are the closest teams are the teams that beat the more athletic teams. Just because you're a good athletic team doesn't mean you're always going to win those games, because it's a team that's more unified and does their job to the best of their abilities are the ones that usually come out on top.
Thanks a lot, Coach. We're rooting for you the rest of the way.
Well, thank you. We'll take it.
Always good to hear from Coach Bellis and his insight, so thanks a lot, Coach. Chili, this is where you're going to say hashtag fact. You know what? I'm going to say hashtag fact. This was the highest scoring game in Hamilton football history. 90 points between the two teams. Anytime there's 90 points, I know you love that, Chili.
Yeah, no, I love seeing a lot of points on the board. The thing that amazed me most about this game is what I heard about on Hamilton's defensive side of the ball. Not just a surprise from Brewington getting to flip and play some in the secondary, but the linebacking core for Hamilton really came alive with Lattimore Hervey and Justin Quinn. Very, very active, tackling anything that moved, anything that wasn't wearing a Hamilton jersey.
Tyler Alexander also played a little bit of defense as well.
And that's good to see. I think it was you that I was talking to on the sideline that I thought you told me that you wish that you could see some of these Hamilton kids get the opportunity to play on both sides of the ball. You know, sometimes, you know, you need to put your best available athletes out there. And that's clearly what Bellis is doing. You know, he had to make that move when he won that last championship with Cole Luke. He had to give Cole Luke some opportunities to play some offense, return some kicks, and do a couple things. And, man, I cannot say enough, though. I got to touch on Basha for a second. Deshaun.
Oh, it was amazing. He was
good. You know, it might be scary for some teams that have Basha on their schedule right now that, you know, now they found a legit weapon out of the backfield. And if now they know how to use him, it is going to be problems for these next two teams that face them.
Absolutely. And, yeah, the Basha Bears, actually, they do have just the one game left, and that will be at home to Perry. So, yeah, that's a game, and unfortunately, that's rivalry night, and sometimes it's tough to be in two places at once. We know we love the Chandler-Hamilton rivalry, but that Basha-Perry game could certainly be something special. And speaking of the Perry Pumas, yeah, they're on the Hamilton Huskies schedule next. What a comeback. They defeated the Brophy Broncos 35-27. Perry is 7-1 and once again trending upwards. They did it with some trickery. Colby Dickey tosses a touchdown pass to Brock Purdy. The James boys, they combined for 10 receptions and 212 yards. They each found the end zone. It was good to see Clyson Conrad and Kenny Fultz get in the end zone. They were both a big part of that season-opening win against Desert Vista. And Ralph, Chili, wow, the Perry Pumas have, I'm going to say, defeated one of the big three. They obviously were impressive, because when they were down 24-13, I did not expect, 21-13, I didn't expect Perry to come back like that.
I think people have been waiting, if I'm going to use the word elite, to talk about Perry. They beat an elite team.
Yes, they did.
And they're 7-1. I don't believe they've ever won 8 games. I'm pretty sure they have not. That to me will be the determining factor, getting to 8 wins, because it either means that you got out of the first round of the playoffs in the highest division in the state, or it means that you beat either Hamilton or Basha.
That's right.
So for me, 8 wins is the mark. I'm very impressed with what they did against Brophy, especially because I said that if Perry turns the ball over, then that's really going to be them putting nails in their own coffin. But they would turn around after making mistakes
and come up with tough defense.
Yeah, big tough stand. Defense. 4 and outs. And stopping, well, not 4 and outs, but 3 and outs, and then stopping Brophy on 4th down on multiple occasions. I'm really impressed with how aggressive the defense has been, with how disciplined the defense has been. And I think that they have the right mixture of players on offense, most of which are coming back next year. And you have to really look at that as if they don't end up doing the damage this year against Hamilton and
Chandler.
Or Hamilton and Basha. If they don't end up doing the damage this year, you have to leave the window open for them to possibly get it done next year. And so they're definitely set up well for the future, and they're set up well for the rest of this season.
Absolutely.
Beating a team that is elite, I guess, like Brophy, does not make one elite.
Because Basha beat Brophy.
Because Basha
beat Brophy. This is true.
So, I don't want to take anything away from Perry.
Right.
What I will say is, in the past, Perry teams would not have come back from being down 10-0 in the first quarter. Not because the coaching was bad or they weren't capable, but just because it wasn't in them.
That's right. Back. No, that's a good way to put it.
It just wasn't in them. This team and this coaching staff has now figured it out. They know exactly what they have at their disposal, they know that they don't have to hit that panic button.
That's right.
I think Perry teams in the past would have hit that panic button, and it would have imploded completely, and we'd be looking at a completely different type of score. What Perry did on Friday was amazing.
Yes, it was.
We said that they had to get at least two of these wins against these four mm-hmm. teams. They're 1-1 right now.
That's right, yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens
sure.
These next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, let's shake out this division for the rest of the year. And at the end of Friday's game, Steve Bellis called it the SEC of high school football because it is the premier division for a win, for a reason. So you figure you got Perry and Hamilton this week, you got Brophy and Chandler this week as well, and then you got the rivalry weekend the following week with Brophy being off. There's a lot of intangibles. I mean, we even saw Basham move up a point from 20 to 19 after the loss, so
yeah.
They could sneak in the playoffs, could. And obviously, for me, I think Basham, if they beat Perry, they're in. If they don't, they're probably out. But still, that whole 2, 3, and 4 seed, that's up for grabs, and that's what the AIA is showing right now.
Basha has to get to 15. They have to because Cesar Chavez is going to get that 16th spot, and they're probably not going to be in a position where they're in the top 16 when they are granted that number 16 spot. I actually talked to a couple of kids from Cesar Chavez today, just kind of hashing out where I thought that they would end up, and I told them that, you know, barring an absolutely unforeseen circumstance, to prepare themselves for Mountain Point in week one.
Makes sense.
And Basha just has to worry about getting to that 15 spot. So what Basha needs Dobson to lose. Basha needs Corona to lose. Basha needs Horizon to lose. And all of those things are definitely feasible. Horizon is playing against Boulder Creek, and Boulder Creek plays everybody tough. You know, Dobson has been good, but they haven't necessarily shown the ability to close. And Corona has Mountain Point this week and Desert Vista next.
Right.
So getting a win against Perry and watching a couple other teams take losses while the teams that Basha has played against inevitably will probably be getting wins, mm-hmm. like Pinnacle.
And Pinnacle and Desert Vista both played well over the yeah. last few games. They suddenly they're in the thick of things.
All of that will work in Basha's favor. The strength of just the division as a whole should all work in Basha's favor. Basha does need Red Mountain to perform well against Mesa Mountain View.
Okay.
Right. Because they did lose to Red Mountain, and they have not played Mesa Mountain View. And so that would be very good for them as well. So there's a number of factors that Basha needs to kind of go their way, but it's definitely still possible. And at 4-6, you could look at the 15 seed, you know, potentially lining up against a team like Chandler or possibly even Hamilton again. You know, absolutely. We'll see.
You know, I'm not sure what to expect mm-hmm. when this playoff thing comes
it's
around.
Wild.
The formula's a little much for me. my theory is just, you know, try to get one of those
just get the
one
W's.
Of the top 10 teams. You know, that's the safest way to play it. I can't for the life of me not see Ryan Kelly in the playoffs somehow his senior year.
You know what's funny? It's funny you mention that. As I was driving over to Bash before the game, I'm like, wow, this might be the last time I see Ryan Kelly in a Bash uniform. They're off this week. And next week, of course, there's the rivalry game. I don't know where I'll be. But, yeah, his regular season is coming to an end. And like you said, I hope he gets in.
I will buy pizza for the top 24 players, the starting 24 players at Perry, if they beat Ryan Kelly and keep him out of the playoffs. I think Ryan Kelly is going to will his team to victory. Not me picking, you know, and I hate to make this about me picking, you know, Kelly over Perry or
right,
whatever.
No, it's,
but I just do not, for the life of me, I see and hear all the Ryan Kelly slander of like the kid doesn't have the heart or whatever, and he's to Hollywood and he's got his skull. That's not him. This kid wants to win, and I promise you, when it comes to the rivalry game, I don't care if you have to tape his arms on or whatever it is, he is going to find a way to get on that field and get that win for Basha, and they will get in the playoffs with that.
That's awesome. I mean, like I said, it's weird with this whole round robin of teams, and We just root for great football. I mean, I'm certainly a Ryan Kelly fan. We're starting to see Perry rise up. Then, of course, there's the whole Chandler Hamilton talk. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I believe we'll have Coach Gerald Todd of Bash as our guest next week. So that's a perfect guy to have as we move into week 10.
And we'll also, coming up, have some feedback and audio from the annual Battle for Arizona Avenue luncheon that's going down at Soho 63 this Tuesday, a week from today when we're recording. We'll be out there and hopefully get to talk to a few players and coaches, and all that will be part of next week's podcast.
All righty, Ralph Chili, we're coming down to the stretch. This is the fun time. Ralph, Chili, Brett, we're out.